Jake and Jeff. Appreciate you coming back. I learned that intimating that the afternoon talk will be better than the morning one helps you only up until the time you have to give the afternoon talk. But I want to ask you, are you a chameleon? You know what a chameleon is? A chameleon is a special clade of lizards that's distinctive and highly specialized. It seems that in reptiles, variety is just almost infinite. I still, when I'm out around ponds, see snakes that are marked differently than any snake I ever think I saw before. It's just almost infinite. And there are 100 different varieties of chameleon. Many of them are native to Africa and Madagascar, but they're found all around the world, and we have some here in the US as well. First thing that comes to everybody's mind about a chameleon is its ability to blend in with its surroundings. Most chameleons just change from brown to green and back, but some can turn into almost any color, and they can change in as little as 20 seconds. Light, temperature, and even mood cause chameleons to change color. Changing color can make the chameleon more comfortable. It is just protective coloration. Sometimes it helps the chameleon to change its communications with other chameleons when it changes color. Chameleons have the most distinctive eyes of any reptile. Their eyes can move independently of each other. I was going to try to show you how they do that, but my eyes won't do that. But they move independently of each other. They can rotate and focus separately to observe two different objects simultaneously. And they have a full 360-degree arc of vision around their whole body, so that even if you're directly behind a chameleon, it can still see you. They have very good eyesight for reptiles, and when they desire, they can focus both eyes at the same time on the same thing and get a real sharp stereoscopic vision with depth perception as well. They can see a little insect 30 feet away. I'm not sure who's 30 feet from me right now, but if we had a chameleon up here, it could see a mosquito on your forehead back there. That's how good their eyesight is. A chameleon's tongue is typically 1.5 or 2 times the length of its body, excluding the tail, and they can extend the tongue to take in prey in 0.007. That's 0.07. You can't hardly see that. Chameleon feet are built for movement in trees. Each toe has a sharp claw to help grip whatever surface it's on. Chameleons cannot hear very well. Like snakes, they don't have an outer ear, they don't have a middle ear, and there's no ear opening, nor is there an eardrum, and yet they're not deaf. They can detect certain sound frequencies. So that's the chameleon. But the reason for bringing this up is that I learned there's an entirely different definition for the word chameleon, because there's another creature that has the ability to look like what is around him, and that is man. Man feels a very strong pressure to conform. So a secondary dictionary definition of chameleon is, quote, a person who changes their opinion or behavior according to the situation. The chameleon takes the color of his background and his environment, whether it's a bush or a tree or sod. There are chameleons which, if they're on the side of your brick house, they become the color of the brick. And then they move over to the deck, they become the color of the deck. Doesn't matter what color the house or the deck are. If they're on your deck, they're the color of your deck, and you can hardly see them. And many Christians have a chameleon-like faculty in which they can take on the color of the world around them. Hence the reading of Romans 12, be not conformed to this world. It's just as difficult to distinguish the chameleon from its background as it is to distinguish many Christians from the world that they happen to be in at the moment, because chameleon Christians just blend in with their surrounding environment. They allow the culture to influence their mood, their attitudes, their character, and their behavior. They change their identity in an instant to make themselves more comfortable. Their vision allows them to see and experience every kind of walk of life there is, and they're focused on everything surrounding them at the moment. Whatever the situation is, they can appear to be the same as the situation. Sometimes their tongues are long, seeking to belittle others to make themselves feel good. They don't like to be in the minority, and by degrading others, they can become part of the majority and do what is popular, even if it's not right, and they know it's not right. They hold on to whatever is closest to them at the moment. They refuse to hear the truth, but they do anything to appease their flesh. It's not that they can't hear, but it's that they turn a deaf ear to what they know deep down to be right. Now, God said to his people in Ezekiel chapter 11, verse 12, "You shall know that I am Jehovah, for you have not walked in my statutes, neither executed my judgments, but have done after the manner of the heathen that are round about you." They were doing the popular things that everybody around them was doing. Those things change over time. The popular things today are not what the popular things were just a few years ago. But the chameleon changes to keep up with the times. And they were trying, in the Ezekiel's time, they were trying to combine those unholy practices with the worship of Jehovah. So the nation of Israel had become a nation of chameleons who only wanted to blend in with the surrounding nations so they could be more comfortable with their sin. God had declared himself to be the king over Israel, but they rejected him and wanted a man to be king over them, because that's what the other nations had. So that became the comfort zone for Israel. The big problem with chameleon Christianity is that instead of influencing the environment influences them. The ability to adapt can be a good thing or it can be a bad thing. But anybody who decides to live a godly life finds that they have to turn away from a lot of the things that are going on around them. It's true of every one of us to say that you're either going to be a leader or a follower. You're either going to be a thermostat or a thermometer. A thermometer takes the surrounding temperature and reflects that, whereas a thermostat sets the temperature. And God wants Christians to set the atmosphere. A thermostat sets the atmosphere. That's what we need to do. We can't do that and allow everything else to dictate our thoughts and our emotions. We dare not be ashamed of Jesus just because he's not popular anymore. We've got to be bold for him. He himself said in Mark chapter 8, verse 38, "Whosoever therefore shall be ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him also shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he cometh in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." I would really hate for the Lord to have to be ashamed of me. And how can we be ashamed of the Lord after everything he did for us and continues to do? Now, everybody likes to be liked, and that's not necessarily bad. But it can lead us to avoid differing with the people that we're with just in order to try to keep their approval. Being a chameleon can be a route to respectability. It can be a route to acceptance in the eyes of those who are around us. But remember, Jesus said, "Woe to you when all speak well of you," because that's what their ancestors did to the false prophets, he said, Luke 6:26. Accommodation can seem to offer peace and respectability, but Jesus says, "Woe to us if we live to impress fools." I think some of us are afraid that God's truth is just not going to be able to stand up to the scrutiny in the marketplace of ideas. And this fear perhaps leads us to retreat into a more widely acceptable and therefore a more easily defended position. If we're lucky, we feel like we may be able to back up far enough to avoid all attack entirely. And there certainly is a great pressure in our time to compromise our view of truth. Because it seems that on every side, we're told that human beings cannot possibly know God, we cannot possibly know absolute truth, and anything we think we know comes to us filtered, and therefore it comes to us distorted. This is what we call religious relativism. And according to this outlook, we can hold opinions as private expressions of faith, but we must not think that our opinions correspond to anything outside of our own heads. Our opinions can only be described as true if by that we mean they are truly helpful to the people who hold those opinions. But they're regarded as your truth rather than as the truth. Meanwhile, all the time, the Christian claim never changes. And the Christian claim is that God has made himself known by revelation in words to ordinary human beings. The problem only gets worse when we understand that God has revealed that being reconciled to him happens only through Jesus Christ. And it's the exclusiveness of the claims of Christ that are probably the biggest single offense today to people who do not see themselves as Christians. Actually, it's the exclusiveness of the claims of Christ that may be the biggest offense today to some people who do see themselves as Christians. That exclusivity is what draws the hostility and the condescension and the ridicule, because that exclusivity is so radically dissonant to today's prevailing wisdom. We face the social reality of pluralism, and it increases the pressure on us. We live, we work, we study right next to people of other religions, other philosophies, and other views of the world, far more than our ancestors did in most cases 100 years ago. And a pluralistic society does not make relativism true, but it can make it seem to be true. The religions of the world, being many roads up the same mountain, seems so tolerant, it seems so appealing, that there's a lot of magnetism there. The trouble is, if we have a wrong theology, we're going to have a wrong morality. And a Christian who lives in the chameleon mode is going to bend to whatever is the currently respectable viewpoint on whatever ethical issue we're talking about. It doesn't make any difference whether it's abortion or sexual behavior or attitudes toward various races. It doesn't matter what the specific issue is. We always will take the socially acceptable view, the politically correct view at the time, if we're a chameleon. And into none of those issues will the Bible ever be allowed to speak in an authoritative way. Now, pagans invariably conform to the zeitgeist, the spirit of the age, whatever it is at the time, but Christians are supposed to conform to the Holy Spirit rather than the zeitgeist. If we conform just to the zeitgeist, then we have a saltless Christianity. And a saltless Christianity will always shape itself by taking from within Christian truth only those things that are socially resonant then and there. And it will neglect or reject those Christian teachings that challenge the most respectable ideas in the culture at the time. This is groupthink, and it's very common among human beings. Not too long ago, I had just conducted a Bible study for a group of probably 25 or 30 young people. It was a beautiful day, and I was standing in the living room of the home where we'd had this study, that this room had just been filled with young people, but they went outside, and I was standing with the people who owned the house at this picture window looking at this little group of kids that had just gone outside, and I'll tell you, it was like watching a flock of sheep. They'd all be over here for a little while doing one thing, then somebody'd have the idea, they'd go over here, but they moved just like you've seen a flock of sheep moving around, and that's good. I like to see them be together, but it was almost like a groupthink mentality. I'm glad they were with that particular group. This is the nature of man. We are flock animals by nature. God calls us sheep, and we are sheep. We have that in common with sheep. But the trouble is, with the secularization that we have now in our society, God and the transcendent realm can seem irrelevant to those parts of life where the important things happen. And even many who believe in God almost have to pinch themselves to remember that it's God who was behind all this technology in the first place, and that all this technology depends on him and his laws. It doesn't run on its own. Our whole orientation to God is beginning more and more to be seen as obsolete and irrelevant and superfluous in a technologically controlled world. That's true except when there happens to be a rare danger or an emergency that pushes us suddenly beyond what human technological competence can handle. And then we go back to God in our thinking for a while. But the vast majority of, quote, real life goes on without reference to anything beyond the immediate cause and effect world that we seem to control. God's absence or his irrelevance becomes more plausible than his presence. And this encourages the retreat of faith from public life into private experience. So we can dilute our salt in this kind of an environment. We can dilute our salt without knowing it. The advertising world is not designed to teach us contentment. Most music And most entertainment in our time does not extol modesty. It does not extol high standards of morality. The world is designed to indoctrinate us in things that are wrong for the most part. The God of this world is Satan. We talked about that in Dan's class this morning. The God of this world is Satan. And it's hard to spot a Christian when he talks just like the world. It's hard to know that a girl is devoted to higher ideals when her dress is the same provocative attire as the rest of society. You just never would figure out that a guy is a Christian when he goes to all of the same places and does all of the same things as those who profess no allegiance to Christ. What did your friends at college say when they found out you were a Christian? Oh, they never found out. You know, that conversation has actually occurred. What's that sound like to you? To me, it sounds like 4 years of a chameleon camouflaging his Christianity. Do you change colors to fit the occasion? Are you one color on Sunday and another color on Monday? When Paul said, "Be not conformed to this world," that's a sure indication that there's a strong magnetism about the world. When he says, "Set your affection on things above, not on things on the earth," he is acknowledging what our natural tendency is. When John says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world," he's saying that there is an attraction there. And though it's difficult to do, we must learn to show our true colors all the time. We cannot serve God and mammon. The true color of a Christian is constancy. The true Christian is a constant Christian. His constancy is determined not by externalities. It's not determined by circumstances. It's determined by faith. And that faith is consistent. That faith is continual. He will be who he is regardless of the situation. You know, you can appear to be God's gift to the church on Sunday and the devil's right-hand man the rest of the week. You can come in here holding your Bible in one hand and holding on your halo with the other hand, just barely lower than the angels, just so perfect that you'd give the Pharisees a run for their money, put them to shame. But when you leave, you change yourself into the lifestyle of whoever you come into contact with next. If you change color to present the image you think other people want to see, what is that but hypocrisy? For us to maintain effectiveness in the world, we have to maintain integrity in relation to the Lord and also with other people. But instead of setting a good example, we sometimes become fearful of not fitting in, and suddenly those same lips that were praising God in church are spewing curses and lies. Jesus said, when you do that, you're like whitewashed tombs, beautiful on the outside, but filled inside with dead men's bones and all sorts of impurity. There's an awful tendency to think that we can have it both ways. But having it both ways, there's nothing that sickens God more than us trying to have it both ways. The Bible says you can't ignore God and get away with it. Be not deceived, God is not mocked. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. So let us not be weary in well-doing. Don't get discouraged and give up. We'll reap a harvest of blessing at the appropriate time. You know, there was a time in this middle part of America, and I'm old enough to remember it, there was a time when there was enough homogeneity in the society. There was enough of a Christian consensus around us that we could find large areas of agreement with substantial portions of the population around us. But things have changed now. There's much more of a glaring disparity now between us and the world. If I'm out on one of those walks and I see a random person, get to talking with them, there's not a lot of chance now that I'm going to find the areas of agreement that I would have found just a few years ago. I've noticed that change. More and more over time. There is more frequently on our part a need to stand up and be counted. There's a need to display the distinct separation between us and the world. Jesus said in Matthew 10:33, "If anybody denies me here on earth, I will deny that person before my Father in heaven." Now, that's unqualified. That's a flat statement that all of us can understand. With our friends or family or coworkers, we're supposed to reflect the standards of Christ and truth and right. Right out of high school, I worked in a machine shop. Only men worked in the shop part. There was an office and there were some women working in there, but only men worked in the actual shop running the machinery. And the minds of many of those men were just like cesspools. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaketh. We worked from 7 or 7:30 in the morning till 5 or 5:30 in the afternoon. And what came out of those men's mouths all day long was just relentless. Now, any Christian hired into that kind of an environment has a choice to make. Are you going to stand for God's truth or are you not? After that, I moved into a college dorm. Same thing there. You know, there are times when even our very silence can send the wrong message. There are times when people will think you're accepting what they're doing and saying if you don't speak out against it. Silence isn't always golden. Sometimes it's just yellow. The Lord said in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 17, "Come ye out from among them and be ye separate, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you." I think the easiest way to handle Christian life in those kind of environments is to, as politely and kindly as possible, let people know your convictions right away, just as soon as possible. Let them know where you stand, and then stand there. That's the easiest way, easier than a lot of other methods that I've seen people try. When you go to apply for a job, tell them, "I'll be as flexible as possible with the hours, but I won't work Sunday mornings from 9 to noon because I meet with the church then." And stand on that. Some bosses will purposefully test you on that. They'll hire you, and pretty soon they put you on to work on Sunday morning, and they'll watch to see if you meant what you said. My advice is be such a good employee that they'll make exceptions for you. And I've known that to work for some of us. I think that sometimes we don't realize how different we really are from the world. It shows more than you might think. I have often been surprised. You and I are just different from the world. A few years ago, I talked on the phone with a girl that I went to high school with, and I had had no contact with her since high school, so this was like almost half a century. And the first question out of her mouth as we started talking was, "Are you still real religious?" I was really taken aback by that because I didn't know I came across as real religious in high school. That would have been kind of foreign to me, that idea as coming across as real religious, whatever that meant to her. But that's the way she thought of it. When she got me on the phone, that was her first question. In Christ, our very thought pattern is different, and it shows sometimes whether you realize it or not. I remember when I was student teaching a few years after high school, after a couple of months, one of the girls that worked in the office said to me when I came in on a Monday morning, she said, "What makes you different from the others?" And I said, "What are you talking about?" She said, "Well, your attitude is different. Your whole approach to the job is different. You talk different." I hadn't even thought about it. And because I hadn't thought about it, I missed a wonderful opportunity to put in a good word for the Lord there because I was just so taken aback. I didn't know that I was coming across as different. Well, that passage that Zach read in Romans 12 and 2 means don't copy the behavior and customs of this world. Rather, let God transform you into a new person by changing the very way you think. And when you think different, you be different, and you talk different. It's always easier to blend into the world than to live by Bible principles. But when we give in to the temptations of the world to fit in, we hurt ourselves, and maybe even worse, we hurt the world. On the other hand, when you stand for truth, yes, people might laugh at you and in some ways hate you. Paul said the preaching of the gospel sounds like foolishness to those who are on the road of destruction. But if you're telling the truth, there's always a consolation in that, even if people don't believe you. Telling the truth is its own reward. It has its own consolation. Some will disagree with you publicly, but they will agree with you privately later. Have you ever noticed that? Later, when the other people aren't around and they don't have to face up to what their reactions are, they will come to you. I've had this happen on more than one occasion. They'll come to you later. You take a stand among a group of people, and then later somebody will come to you privately and say, "You know, I agree with what you said last night." But they wouldn't say it in front of the group, but they'll say it to you later. I've had that happen. The Lord said, many will hate you because of your allegiance to me, but he who endures to the end shall be saved. In John Morris's class a few Wednesday evenings ago, he talked about a man who had left the faith after being in it a long time, and the idea was expressed, he was so close. He was so close to the end. What a tragedy that is. He that endures to the end shall be saved. And it's not an easy road, and the way is narrow when you decide to follow Jesus. But we can say with the Apostle Paul, I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me. Whatever strength you need, he provides to you in that moment. And that you can count on, and you can learn that from experience. One great key to staying on the narrow way is as simple as the choice of our friends. It is best if our best friends are Christian friends. Failing that, at least choose friends who share the most important of your values and standards. And ask yourself periodically, are my friends enriching my life or are they pulling me down? What can I do about it? What should I do about it? Remember the Proverbs. My son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. Don't walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path. Be not deceived, says the New Testament. Evil company corrupts good habits. Way back in the book of Exodus, it was said in Exodus 23, verse 2, you shall not follow a crowd to do evil. And the first Psalm. Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night. Peter said, we have spent enough of our past lifetime doing the will of the Gentiles. We've already wasted plenty of time on that, and that's true of virtually all of us. Paul said, no longer walk as the rest of the Gentiles walk. Peter says, the rest of the Gentiles will think it strange that you run not with them in the same flood of dissipation, the King James says, same excess of riot, and they will be speaking evil of you. John says, we know that we are of God, and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one, 1 John 5:19. So Peter says, gird up the loins of your mind and be sober. You know, a really high concentration of the New Testament comments and content is on this very subject. The bottom line being that transformation is the path that's worth choosing. If we want to please God, we have to examine our entertainment and our recreation. Is it something that the Lord would approve of? Is it making me a better person? Am I too influenced by outside faces and outside forces? Do you have a real sense of yourself, apart from the applause and apart from the approval of those around you? Do you have a substance and an identity that transcends family and friends, that transcends culture and crowd? Do you have a sense of worth that transcends human relationships and whatever social assessments may be made? Paul says in the beginning of Romans 12, I urge you on the basis of God's love for you, be not conformed. Do you have an inner gyroscope that keeps you on course? The most severe disability I ever encounter involves people who are paralyzed from the neck up. Nobody's ever gone broke by giving more than they receive in life. Have faith in God, have faith in your mission in life. Set your goals and pay the price. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Don't be yoked together with unbelievers. What do righteousness and wickedness have in common? What fellowship can light have with darkness? Listen to the right voices. We need wise counselors to help us stay on the Lord's path. James says this is a message to obey, not just a message to listen to. And if you don't obey, you're only fooling yourself. So let us purify ourselves from everything that contaminates body and spirit, perfecting holiness in the fear of God, 2 Corinthians 7, verse 1. Let's seek first the kingdom of God. If we don't, the world will lead us right down the path to doom. It's a slippery, slippery slope. I guess the question ultimately is, who is going to evangelize who? We must evangelize the world. A chameleon is the opposite of a butterfly. A butterfly is a caterpillar transformed. And the question is expanded to become, are you a chameleon or a butterfly? With a chameleon, change is external and superficial. Whether a chameleon happens at the moment to be green or brown or red, it's still the same critter. He doesn't change who he is, he just changes his colors. Inside, he's the same. But the metamorphosis from a caterpillar to a beautiful butterfly is internal. It's within the cocoon. It's inside the chrysalis where the action is. This is an inside-out work that the Lord wants to do with each of us. The caterpillar goes through authentic changes that will enable it to fly as a new creature, a butterfly. So are we chameleons, or are we internally changing into a new creature? Are we just going through the motions, or are we really being transformed? Are you a pagan, pretending to be a Christian in certain situations, or are you a committed child of God, transformed in your heart? Stop masquerading in the habits of this world, its mannerisms, its speech, its styles. Romans 12:2, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. This is progressive sanctification, and this is how to live a holy life in a pagan world. We are to work out what God works in us. Jesus said, without me, you can do nothing. Progressive sanctification is a joint venture between God and us. So David wrote, create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Psalm 51, verse 10. Christians are nonconformists. They're some of the most radical nonconformists that you'll ever see. We know there is pleasure in sin and lawlessness, but we also know that sin will deceive and kill us. The Bible speaks of the deceitfulness of two things, sin and wealth. Many live lives of practical materialism and practical atheism without hope and without God in the world, because the God of this world hath blinded the minds, as we saw in 2 Corinthians this morning. The wisdom of this world is foolishness in the sight of God. We know that this age is not permanent. This age is temporary. Everything we see around us is passing away. It's like Sodom, about to be destroyed. And a Christian is wiser than to invest in a real estate deal in Sodom. It's going down the tubes. The fashion of this world is passing away. 1 Corinthians 7, verse 31. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen. For what is seen is temporary, but that which is unseen is eternal. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 18. J.B. Phillips translates Romans 12:2 in this way. Don't let the world around you squeeze you into its own mold, but let God remold your minds from within. It's well known that we are imitative by nature. Have you ever been around somebody with such a strong accent that you found yourself gaining an accent of your own as you talked with them? I see heads nodding to that. It's happened to me too. Have you ever been in conversation with somebody and you started to mimic their attitudes and maybe even mimic their gestures after a while? Have you ever picked up a swearing habit from a friend who had one? This is all the chameleon effect. We are imitative by nature, and there's nothing wrong with that in itself. But we must not imitate the world around us. We ought to imitate godly people. Paul said, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Transformation goes on deep within you. Metamorphosis occurs deep within, but it manifests outwardly in how we live. Saul of Tarsus was going along the road, breathing out threatenings and slaughters against us, but he became different from the inside out. And he uses that same word. It's the Greek word for metamorphosis. That same word in 2 Corinthians 3:18, which I gather you talked about last week. last Sunday morning when I wasn't here. Same word, metamorphosis, that's in 2 Corinthians 3:18. That's also in Romans 12 and 2. Same Greek word. Transformed, he says in 2 Corinthians 3, transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. It's hard because you and I live in two different worlds at the same time, this one and the one to come. In this world, we live like Joseph, living a holy life in pagan Egypt. We live like Daniel lived, for God's glory in pagan Babylon. We live like Moses, who chose to be mistreated with the people of God rather than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season because he was looking ahead to his reward. So we have reprogrammed minds, determined and reshaped by the power of God's Spirit and not by the passing fashion of this age. The will of God is not changing moral relativism. The will of God is absolute and unchanging. It doesn't need to be changed because it's already perfect. It abides always. Nobody can improve on it. It doesn't lack anything. Now, as we come down to the end of these comments, I want to refer to something Winston Churchill says, which it's always struck me like a ton of lead. Winston Churchill said, "People occasionally stumble over the truth, but most of them pick themselves up and hurry off like nothing happened." Is that what you'll do with this lesson this afternoon? I hope not, because the more you do that, the easier it becomes to continue doing that. You harden your heart, and you can eventually get to the place where it seems like your heart can't be reached anymore. But if a chord of your heart has been touched by these thoughts this afternoon, don't waste that touch. Let that touch resonate within your inner being, and let God's truth change you. Let God change you. If any are outside of Christ today or you have anything to bring before the brethren, let us know how we can assist you by coming up to the front as we stand and sing the final number.